Logistics. This meeting is held in compliance with the Assembly Bill 361, which allows flexibility in Brown Act teleconferencing procedures as addressed by the board under Agenda Item 1E. The public is encouraged to participate in the meeting telephonically by dialing the conference line or by clicking the web link listed on the posted agenda. The public may submit written comments to the board by emailing publiccomments@innovationhigh.org. The public may also provide comments telephonically during the public comments section of the meeting agenda. Reasonable accommodation will be provided for any individual with a disability. Please see the accommodations notice. And as required by state law SB 126, this meeting will be audio recorded and posted on the charter school's website. Opening items. I will call this meeting of Orange County Workforce Innovation High School, regular board meeting, operated by Western Educational Corporation, a California nonprofit public benefit corporation, for Thursday, January 5th, 11:30, to order. Roll call and establishment of quorum. Michael Adams is here. Klaus Beck.
Here.
Thank you, Klaus.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you, Claudette.
Okay.
Frank Lucasa?
Here.
Dr. David Rathgate?
Here.
You're all present and accounted for and do have a quorum for today's meeting. We'll move on to the Pledge of Allegiance, and I will ask Frank Lucasa to lead us in the pledge, and everyone else, please place your phones on mute.
My pleasure, Michael. Please place your right hand on your heart. Ready? Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Frank. And staff introductions, corporate officers.
Well, thank you very much, President Adams. This is Jeff Brown, Chief Executive Officer. I'd like to wish the board a very happy new year, and it's good to see your faces again.
Thank you.
Happy New Year. Good morning. This is Jerry Vincent, Corporate Officer.
Thank you. And school staff.
Good afternoon, everyone. Happy New Year. Julie Fava, Area Superintendent.
Thank you, Julie.
Hello, everyone. Happy New Year. Val Nguyen, State Federal Programs Coordinator.
Thank you, Val.
Good morning. This is Jeff Martin, Vice President, Charter Relations.
Thank you, Jeff.
Good morning,
and
Skip Hansen. Oh, I was just going to say hi.
Step on you there.
No worries, Mike. Good to see everybody.
Good seeing you. School legal counsel.
Yes, good morning, Bill Thompson, legal counsel, and pleased that we have my colleague Adam Miller is with us here this morning, too.
Thank you. And advisors who are supporting agenda items or presenting.
Hi, Pete Faraja, CEO of Lifelong Learning. Happy New Year, everybody.
Thank you, Pete.
And good morning, Michelle Lopez, Counsel with LLAC.
Thank you, Michelle. And any other staff who wish to introduce themselves at this time? Hearing none, we'll move on to item E, adopt resolution continuing Board of Directors' authority to hold virtual or teleconference meetings pursuant to Assembly Bill 361. Mr. Martineau.
Thank you, President Adams and board members. Please refer to your board package for the resolution for continuing Board of Directors' authority to hold virtual or teleconference meetings pursuant to Assembly Bill 361. Assembly Bill 361 allows boards to continue to meet remotely during states of emergency. As long as the board makes required findings every 30 days, the meeting in person would present imminent risks to the health or safety of attendees. It is recommended the board make the required findings by adopting the enclosed board resolution. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from the board? Hearing none, may I hear a motion to adopt Agenda Item 1E.
Frank Lucasa, I make a motion to adopt Agenda Item 1E.
Thank you.
Madam Beck, I will second that.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Roll call vote. Michael Adams is aye. Claudette Beck?
Aye.
Frank Lucasa?
Aye.
Dr. David Rathgaber?
Aye.
And that passes with four yes votes. Item F. May I hear a motion to approve the agenda for the January 5th, 2023 regular public meeting of the Board of Directors?
Frank Lucasa, I make a motion to approve Agenda Item 1F.
Thank you.
Item F, I will second that.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Roll call vote. Michael Adams is aye. Claudette Beck?
Aye.
Frank Lucasa?
Aye.
Dr. David Rathgaber?
Aye.
And that passes with 4 yes votes. Item 2, public comment. At this time, members of the public may address the board on any item within the subject matter jurisdiction of the board, whether or not the item is on the agenda, by dialing the teleconference line or by clicking the web link listed on the posted agenda. The time allotted for presentation will not exceed 3 minutes, except in the case where a member of the public utilizes a translator, in which case the time allotted will not exceed 6 minutes. In accordance with the Brown Act, no action may occur at this time, but it is the board's prerogative to hold a brief discussion, provide information to the public, provide direction to staff, or schedule the matter for a future meeting. Are there any members of the public on this line at this time who would like to make comment?
Excuse me. Great.
Were any written comments submitted to the board prior to the start of the meeting?
Hi, this is Shelley Sands from the Charter Affairs team here to report that there were no members of the public who submitted written comments or have requested to speak.
Thank you. Item 3, school reports and information. Item A, Title 1, Program Evaluation for 2021-2022 Report, Julie Barra.
Yes, thank you, Board. And at this time, I'd like to reintroduce Mr. Val Nguyen, our state programs coordinator, that will be going over the Title I program evaluation. Val?
Thank you, Julie. Good morning, Orange County High School Board. My name is Val Nguyen. I'm the state and federal programs coordinator for OCI. I'll be presenting our Title I Part A program evaluation. So our Title I program at Orange County Mission High School supports our literacy program. Our students who struggle with academic performance need additional intervention programs and support personnel to effectively address their learning gaps. Federal funding is directed towards hiring literacy teachers who will implement research-based educational strategies. We expect students will improve their performance on academic metrics. In the 2021-2022 school year, 59 students were initially tested for Title I Target Assistance Literacy Support, with 38 being assigned literacy intervention. 38 students assigned to literacy intervention were able to complete a combined 125 intervention credits. For the NWA reading assessment, 134 students completed it. This allowed us to identify students for said literacy intervention support. Overall, a 215 RIT score, or 925 to 969 band, for average reading and Excel score for 21-22. Based on this data from the literacy program, only 25 of those 38, or 66% roughly, of the students who were assigned the literacy intervention were able to effectively use the literacy intervention program. The remaining 13, or 24%, of students did not effectively use the literacy program, literacy intervention program. Due to this, we did not meet our goal. Based on these results, we made the following recommendations. So we recommend increased collaboration between our SRSs and intervention staff to strengthen re-engagement and increase student appointment attendance. We also recommend prioritizing our ELA course placement for students at the beginning of each year. This will ensure students are appropriately placed and referred to literacy intervention and course completion. We recommend personalized learning plan file reviews for English learners and RFEP students to ensure that our IELDP and RFEP monitoring forms are implemented for progress monitoring and intervention support. We recommend extending the intervention outreach services and student engagement efforts to increase student participation. And lastly, provide individualized support on a targeted basis for those students who did not achieve. And we recommend continuing this activity for our next year. Additionally, our program makes provisions for dedicated parent engagement and active participation through our parent advisory committee, English Learning Advisory Committee meetings, our annual surveys, and our various educational partner engagement opportunities. In the 21-22 school year, we provided vital information in both English and Spanish to parents at PAC and ELAC meetings, as evidenced by agendas, signing sheets, and minutes, with a total of 15 participants for the 21-22 school year. Our ELAC officer positions were successfully filled by our quarter four meeting. A parent appreciation night was also held with 23 total participants. 13 parents and guardians completed our annual surveys, and those survey results showed that 77% of our parents and guardians feel encouraged to participate. Although vital information was provided to parents at our PAC and ELAC meetings, not all parents comprehended the information, as evidenced by these parent survey results and drop-in requests for clarification. Parent attendance at PAC and ELAC meetings were generally low, and improvement is needed in communication with early notification and consistent messaging to ensure open access and full attendance. Full parent guardian participation in the annual survey was not reached, and we did not reach our goal of parents feeling encouraged to participate. Based on these findings, in order to strengthen our parent engagement, we recommend to coordinate and align our PAC, ELAC, and Title I meetings to disseminate information in parent-friendly verbiage and messaging. Provide meetings at varying times so that more parents and guardians have options for attendance. Push out the annual surveys early and immerse the school community in messaging around its importance. Provide prompt notifications and consistent reminders, and tie those educational partner events to the annual survey to optimize participation. And lastly, survey families and educational partners to ensure required, relevant, and desired information is shared and provide opportunities for meaningful engagement and educational partner development as well as participation. And we recommend continuing these activities. Thank you, Board.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from the Board?
Yeah. Hi, Val. This is Frank Lacasa. Thank you for that update. Just a quick question. I see that these recommendations here are addressing specific ELA course, looks like deficiencies in literacy programs. But is there a specific, can you elaborate a little bit more on the specific monitoring of these recommendations? I see that there's consistent reminders, but are we talking monthly, or what's the frequency of monitoring that we're doing on these recommendations?
Yeah, absolutely, Frank. Thank you for that question. So that's something we're currently building out. We want to make sure, like you said, there is that cyclical progress monitoring. So I mentioned two forms specifically for our English language learners and our reclassified fluent English language proficient. So these are internal forms that we have we can use with higher fidelity. And we're currently in an initiative right now to reinforce these forms. So that's specifically targeting that subgroup for English language learners. But additionally, for those students who did not achieve in our literacy program, we're working with our site and our teachers to ensure that there is that constant progress monitoring. So that's something we're hoping to implement this year, because we saw these results and we realized that through the various reasons why students did not achieve, whether it's lack of attendance, whether it's lapse in progress, or just not having enough intervention, that we really need to bolster the current practices we have. And bring in new resources so we can support our students.
Okay, great. Thank you, Bob.
Yeah, this is Dave Grathgaber. I got a couple of very quick things. First one is Goal 1 of Action 7. Maybe I heard it wrong when you briefed, but I'm reading it. It says 13 is 24% of the students did not use the program. If that 13 is of the 38, that's 34%.
Thank you for that. Yeah, I apologize. My math might not be correct there. They didn't effectively use the program. So either they started it or didn't complete it, or didn't use it with fidelity, meaning they didn't take an assessment or missed one of the assessments or complete
it. Yeah, I understand that. It was just, if we're going to have a report out there, we should have the percentages correct on it. So if we could make that correction, that would be great. Absolutely. The other thing is on Goal 4, Action 4, I understand having a goal to get full parent-guardian participation. If you can get 60% participation in a survey, you've done really well, but having a goal of full is great. But what concerns me is I want to make sure I'm reading this correctly. Of the people, of the parents who responded to the survey, only 77% felt they were encouraged to participate. Is that correct?
Yes. Those are the parents that answered they felt fully encouraged to participate. So some maybe just didn't answer it, or felt that they their answer was that they were indifferent about the encouragement to participate.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
If you're trying to talk to your own mute.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments from the board? Hearing none, we'll move on to item B, Annual Lifelong Learning Administration Corporation, LLAC, Services Report. Mr. Farajah.
Thank you very much, and Happy New Year to everybody. Appreciate the opportunity to get to share a little bit about the Lifelong Learning Annual Report. I know all of you have the copy in front of you or have been provided a copy of the annual report, which goes into much detail about the services and supports. I'm going to try to do more of a high-level summary and kind of bounce a little bit this time with, you know, coming out of the pandemic, leading into some lessons learned, as well as going into some of the major initiatives and supports that are being focused on right now. I want to start with, the pandemic really exposed, and I think we saw that there is definitely a need for a new way of learning for a specific group of students. I think that's something all of you have known and have supported. But we started to see a lot of, additional voice and innovation come out of the pandemic. And that led us to really want to get a better understanding of what parents want and what parents need through those lessons learned. So we commissioned for the first time ever on behalf of the schools a statewide poll of California high school parents. And what we're looking for, and I'll be transparent, I'm not a political or polling expert, but what I learned is as we were doing this work, we were looking for like 60 to 65% numbers in terms of responses, positive responses towards the questions and content that was being shared with our parents. And what we saw was we were getting responses anywhere from 89% to 92%, which really showed us that there's some momentum and there's an increased parental voice around the need for choice. And I just want to share a couple of those data points. One of them was that 89% of California parents said it's important to structure schools to serve individual students, and that it's not all about a one-size-fits-all approach. Again, I think that goes back to our founders, Dante and Jeff, when they built this program or started this program, that they believed in, personalized learning for kids, for a population of students. The second data point is that 89% of parents thought it was important that students receive one-on-one instruction and small group instruction. Now, both of those go directly towards the model that we deliver and that we believe in, that all of you support, and really validated the work we're doing. But in addition to that, there was one question where 87% of parents said that they should be able to choose what school is best for their youth, right? And I think that's important because the lesson learned out of the pandemic was parents have an increased voice right now and are standing up to make decisions on what they think is best for their student and their child. And all three of those really go back to exactly what model and program we're providing for our students, and that there is support and momentum out there for what we're doing. That data and that poll really led to us really changing our overall messaging a little bit and putting out a new messaging and communications plan around ICANN. And it really focuses on the benefits and value of the program from a student perspective in terms of, and it's all coming from a student voice, that I can prioritize my mental health, that I can feel safe. I can take classes that interest me. I can build lasting connections with teachers, and I can have a say and control my education and my future. So you'll probably see some things out there in terms of social media and advertising and commercials with that new messaging, and we've got really positive results in response from that. And we're excited to continue to move forward and continuing to update that content. With that, I wanted to shift briefly into our external affairs and the work that goes there. It all ties into messaging and communication. And, you know, we were very fortunate last year that we didn't have to fight any anti-charter legislation for the first time in a long time, which was a nice relief so that we could focus on what the work really is. And that's for us to continue to support, advise, and provide services to our schools so that we can, again, meet the needs of all of our kids and communities in which we, you know, we are very fortunate to be able to do. The fact that we didn't have to fight any legislation last year is really a testament, you know, to our external affairs team and Bob Morales and Skip and all the work they do to continue to build relationships with our elected officials, in terms of bringing them on tours, educating, informing them of what we do and who we are, more importantly, why we do what we do, in terms of trying to really serve kids and serve communities. It's going to be very important that work continues moving into this year, because we have over 25% of new elected officials in California. And I know Bob and his team and others have already begun to do that work to continue to build those relationships with new members. And they do a tremendous job, and they'll continue to make that a priority and an initiative as we move forward. You know, that ties right back into our finance support. And before I get into that, I do want to say one thing. It's all of this is done in close collaboration and support from your school leadership, your corporate officers, area superintendents. You know, our job is really to be there to be strategic advisors, and to provide the best responsiveness and supports and services we can. And in terms of finance, it was a very difficult couple years. Something I've never seen in my 25 years of education in terms of how education funding was changing quickly in terms of one-time money through the pandemic, disbursements of money at various times throughout the year. You know, I know people think that a solution to a challenge is always throw more money at it, but it's not always the case. And our finance team, you know, along with the area superintendents and the corporate officers, I think did a phenomenal job, you know, understanding how to manage, to plan, and to make sure we were doing our responsibility to put that money in front of kids to best serve them. And I want to make the distinction. There's a couple responsibilities there. It's not only to make the best decisions in the moment, but it's also to plan for the future. And we all know in the next, or I believe, I'm just going to share this from my opinion and experience. You know, in the next 18 to 24 months, the education budget is not going to look like it has the last 3-4 years. And so we have to balance making the best decisions today for our students and also prepare to be able to continue to provide the level of excellence that I think everyone here expects to our students when the times are not as good. And I think our team has worked really closely, again, with your school leadership and corporate officers and the board. I know you're heavily involved in that as well, to make sure that we're doing that for now and the future. So really proud of the finance team. Our people services division, just as challenging, you know, they're working on a specific initiative around continuing to build out a leadership development program so that we're continuing to put the best people in front of our students, at all times, but they're also heavily involved in supporting the recruiting and hiring of staff. And we all know over the last couple of years, we haven't had the best candidate pool. It's not very deep right now. So that becomes a challenge. And I think they've done a tremendous job, continuing to meet the needs of what the schools are asking for, I think we're going to be in a good position in a couple years, where that candidate pool is going to get a little deeper when we start seeing some of the decisions that have been made in traditional districts and other places come to effect. I hope we never get to where we were in 2007, 2008. But you know, there's a chance where we're going to see more teachers be available, and if we've done our fiduciary duty for that, we're going to be in great shape to continue to recruit and hire and provide training for the best people to put in front of kids. I talked about our external affairs, and they're going to continue to work really hard on the political and legislative front and the community building. Our education team really focused on two main things. You know, I shared last year, as you can imagine, that transition through the pandemic to distance and hybrid and other types of learning platforms was a challenge for our education team. And I think they came out and were super successful in the level of support, again, along with our schools and our school leadership. This year, they're really focused on our trauma resilient education programs, making sure we continue those services and mental health services and other services, wellness programs for our kids. And even diving deep into how do we provide those supports for our staff. And I think not only is that a service and support, but that team has also really become a national thought leader in that space, and it really has a level of expertise that I think all of us should be super proud of. In addition to that, the education team was really focused on continuing professional learning and opportunities for all of our staff, all of the school staff, and have developed an outstanding platform for teachers, for leadership, for administrators, for mandated trainings called Lifelong University, which just provides increased access to professional learning and professional development opportunities. That is super impressive, and is continuing to evolve, and will continue to grow, but something we should be very, very proud of on that. I want to talk a little bit about governance. And our governance team really focusing in on data and making sure students are making adequate progress towards graduation. And that's something we always have to keep at the forefront of our work, that this is about student growth and student outcomes. And our governance team has really focused in. We have a great team doing that. And they definitely took the challenge of how to prioritize to the next level. So kudos to the governance team. Communications, you know, we really provide several types of services and supports to our schools in terms of public relations, internal, external communications, as well as marketing. And those have kind of worked, even though they worked together, they were two separate departments. And, you know, the goal is really to integrate those into one overall communications team so that we can improve and continue to improve our responsiveness to the needs of our schools and to school leadership. And that includes, again, both internal and external communications. So really proud of the work we're doing there. And then lastly, I just think it's important that we recognize our charter affairs team. You know, a lot of that work goes unnoticed because it's behind the scenes. But all of you have sat through probably more board meetings over the last several years than ever. And that's due to many factors with the pandemic, with change in legislation, with transition to virtual board meetings. You know, the potential that we're going to transfer back to in-person at the end of February after the governor announced that the emergency order was going to be rescinded. We'll see what happens there. But that team does a tremendous job making sure we're on top of everything, that everything's coordinated, structured, as seamless as it can be, that people are informed. And I just think it's important because that does happen behind the scenes, and it's important that charter
Thank you. Any questions or comments from the board?
This is Claudia Beck. I just wanted to say, I've said this already, but I wanted to say, I really like the idea that we are on top of all the legislatures and making sure that they know what we do here, because I think that's so, so important. And also, I totally agree when we were talking about the finance. I mean, these last few years, we have been tough. And I'll tell you what, the finance people are just on top of everything. So I really do appreciate how they've worked through these years.
Thank you.
Hi, Pete. This is Frank Lucasa. Thanks for sharing that update. Great information, especially from a strategic level. Just a quick question. Do you get a sense in speaking with the external affairs team that there's a change in sentiment that might be happening at the state and local representative level as far as attitude towards charter schools in general?
Yeah, I'll answer that briefly. And then we do have Bob and Skip on the call if they want to add to this. I think there is a change in sentiment, right? But I think there's a distinction whether that's at a local level, specific to certain communities, or it's on a state level in Sacramento, right? Bob shares all the time that, the tireless work that him and his team do and Skip does, we have a lot of people that when we meet with them support us. But there's difference between supporting and actually advocating when it comes down to it. And so I think there is a change of sentiment. I don't know that if it 100% shifts the narrative in California yet, but I do think it provides us additional opportunities and access to have more conversations than we've ever had before.
Yeah, so, and I completely agree. It's a great question, Frank. It's funny, Bob's been doing this a lot longer than I have. Stepped in the legislative cycle.
He is now joining.
But I would say this is not something that happens overnight. The years that we've spent, and it's one of the reasons why I stepped into this role, is it takes time and layering. And a lot of it's done not necessarily at the elected officials level, but at the staff level. I mean, our struggles for the last 5 years have been with one of the assembly ed staffers who was really personally, just against any programs that weren't traditional. And her boss, who is no longer now in the legislature out of Long Beach, was probably our biggest foe in the kind of schools that we offer, is gone, and there's new folks in there. But the new folks, right, come in with an existing set of staff, many of which they pull from various staffers that are in and around the state capitol. But the work we've been doing at that level with our lobbyists and consultants, with all the staff, because of the turnover of elected officials, is also a big part of when that guy walks in the door and we're calling for a meeting and he says, hey, Jimmy, do you know these guys? Yeah, we've had have them in multiple times. And then what really made a difference, and Bob, you can chime in on this, is when we started bringing kids, the students. It used to be myself and Jeff Brown and Dante and a couple other folks, we'd go visit them, and they're courteous, but when they see a student in front of them, and especially from their district, especially from Orange County, in this case, talking about how these schools really were a lifeline to save their life. I mean, our whole goal, and my whole goal for the last probably 7 years, has been changing hearts and minds as much as we can. And the only way to take a politician and get them to turn in any direction outside of their norm is something that affects them real deeply personal. Frank, I know it's probably why you originally, and many of you joined the board, is attending one graduation and saw these kids' lives changed, which you guys do every day, and with our partner at Orange County Office of Ed, who believe in making sure that these options are available to the kids in Orange County. That's where the work gets done, showing the stories, explaining that if we went away, and I would just say this, post-COVID, the learning loss at the lower grade levels is going to hit us in 4 or 5 years. It just is, and especially in some of our inner city schools. And we're going to be needed more than ever as that release valve for kids that are going to fall behind and by 16, 17 years old aren't going to graduate, and we're going to be there to get them. And Julie's team that. The work's being done. But definitely from an elected official standpoint, I think the work that we're doing right now on the front end of these brand new elected officials who have no experience with us whatsoever, their staff hearing good things about us, putting students in front of them, it's a great opportunity. We already met with about seven freshman legislators early on who were just excited about what we do. So there was none of that politicking. It was just, hey, I love hearing about it. And honestly, the Capitol being closed right now, which is another big deal for us because normally we're walking the halls. They came to our building because, and they were in jeans, which you never see, and then, you know, no tie, just talking about what our schools do. So I think, you know, I'm excited about the future. Politics is never an easy thing, but when you're talking about kids' lives, it makes sense. Bob, any other comments?
Sure. Sure. Thanks, Skip. And I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, I've been involved in politics for the last 40 plus years, and I started at an early age working for a state assemblyman, state senator as his chief of staff, and I got to know a lot of legislators, the legislative process, spent a lot of time in Sacramento and Washington, D.C. And the most important thing to help us tell our story is the students we serve. So we've been strident in getting our students to tell their stories, whether it's taking them to Sacramento or getting new legislators to come to our centers in their district and hearing directly from them. And every time it comes, you know, they'll tell me, Bob, I know what your center's like, you know, but I'll tell them, no, you don't. You really have to come and see our center for yourself and hear the stories of the kids that we're helping change their lives. And given that opportunity to do that, I think we've been successful. And I'm optimistic because there are so many new members that are open-minded to what we do. And the union itself doesn't seem to be have that same stranglehold over them as in years past. And so we've tried to get to them while they're candidates. We spent a lot of time during, once they filed for office, we knew who the two principals were that were running, to get to know them, then get to know us, have conversations on an ongoing basis with them so that they would know our story. And once they came and saw the center, they talked to kids, I think it kind of sealed a deal in their mind. We don't take it for granted. It's a continuous battle, and we continuously work with them to make sure that they understand what we do. And working with our communications team, we're always sending them information. So it's not just when they see us that one time a year when we visit Sacramento or they come to our centers. It's we're always sending information to them. And like Skip said, they're key staff people that have gotten to know who we are and maybe work with one member during one session and then end up going to work for somebody else. Once they get to know who we are, they can be the key to that new legislator saying, oh, I know those guys. This is what they've done. You know, last year I went to their graduation. So we invite them not only to come visit our graduations, we've had a number of them speak at our graduations. So I know that Julie's had some legislators speak at her graduations because we've helped and we've stayed in touch with them. And we've made that ask when they've come to our center. So it's a process that we will continue to do. I think we are the best people to represent ourselves. Although over the course of the last couple of years, we've built a better relationship with the California Charter School Association because we've held their feet to the fire. We've supported them. Now we're asking them to support us and make sure where we don't have relationships that we're working closely together. So I think we've made an effort to be more in touch with them so that we're partners when we're under attack in Sacramento. And, you know, I try and join these meetings when I can. I'm glad I was on today. But, you know, if there's ever an opportunity or a question you have, always know you can reach out to us because chances are we've already spoken to somebody about it. We know what the legislation is that's coming forward. We're closely monitoring who the members of the Education and Appropriations Committees are going to be. And you can bet as soon as those members are assigned, we're going to be up in front of them talking about what we do and making sure they're well-informed about our schools. So,
if I was sitting in your shoes, guys, gentlemen and ladies, this piece of work out of the 26 things, although I think there's many more that we do on behalf of you guys for you, this is at the top of the list in my mind. treating this like running it like a business first before we can even serve students. It's the one thing they can pull, somebody can pull the rug out of us tomorrow with a piece of legislation and we find ourselves out of business because of a small piece in a bill that just says, hey, we're cutting off the funding to non-classroom-based schools next year. That's what we guard for. That's what you are paying us for, and a host of other things to make sure that we keep serving kids. It's very important work, and it's tireless. It's because it's constant. You always have to be in front of these folks, or they forget about you, and that's the unfortunate part.
Yeah, wonderful work and encouraging to hear. Thank you. I appreciate the updates.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for your interest and support.
Any other questions or comments from the board or from corporate officers?
Unmute.
I apologize.
Jeff,
I couldn't get down. I'm here. Yes, I do have some comments to make, and I really want to stress a couple of things here. I want to thank you. First of all, Pete's report was so exciting and so upbeat, and after all the nonsense we've been through for the last couple of years, to be able to have an attitude of future and strength and charging ahead, it's so wonderful to me and to our staff here. Skip, Bob, all you guys, I don't know what else we can say, except that you give us the opportunity to do what we can do best, and that's reach out to the children. Give us the opportunity to make that happen. And it happens because of LLAC, the support that we get. We're a team. We work together. We have to go to bed together. We have to get up in the morning, and we have to go to work together. And that's what we do. And thank you guys so much. I really do appreciate it. On a side note, however, I'm a little disappointed in the Title I report. Matter of fact, I'm a lot disappointed in the Title I report. Title I is a strategic reporting area, and we need to make sure that we get on that line. I'm going to take some effort here with our staff to find out what it's going to take to make that happen. I'm disappointed, and I just want to let you know that. Having said that, I'm just going to move on. Back to you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments from the board? Hearing none, we'll move on to item 4, additional corporate officers and board members' observations and comments. Mr. Brown, do you have anything else?
I think I said it. I think, do I have to say it again? I do appreciate it.
No.
Thanks, everybody.
Ms. Vincent?
Thank you, sir. I concur with all that's been said. LLAC's support is so valuable as it frees up Julie and her team to focus on our students' educational needs and those hundreds of thousands of transactional activities that take place by LLAC in support of the board and the officers, and Julie and her team is invaluable. So thank you all very much. Thanks, Pete, for the presentation.
Thank you. Mr. Hanson. You're on mute.
You're muted.
Big thank you just to the, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Big thank you to the board members, again, just sticking with this movement and this vision. We've got some very tenured board members over the many 20 years who just love the work, and I just want to thank you guys because it is, it's been a tough couple years having to meet every month, and thank you for sticking in there with us and being supportive of the students that we so desperately want to serve. So thank you for you guys.
Thank you. Any board members have observations or comments? Hearing none, we'll move on to item 5, closed session. At this time, I'd like to request a motion to adjourn the open public board meeting to go into closed session for public employee performance evaluation under Government Code Section 54957B1. Title, Area Superintendent. So may I hear that motion?
Frank Lucasa, I make a motion to adjourn the open session and move into closed session.
Thank you.
Right back, I will second that.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Roll call vote. Michael Adams is aye. Claudette Beck?
Aye.
Frank Lucasa?
Aye.
Dr. David Rathgaber?
Aye.
And that passes with 4 yes votes, and we will now be moved into closed session.
It appears we are still waiting for Board President Adams.
to be returned back to the open meeting.
You're the board secretary. Would you like to go ahead and report the vote and
sure.
That no action was taken?
Yes. Board member Frank Lucasa voted to leave the closed session and go into our open meeting, and that was followed by Claudette Beck, who seconded that. It was unanimous by our board to go out of closed session, and there was no action taken in closed session. So now what we would like to go ahead and go on to our last board meeting. We can go on to closing items, and our next regular board meeting date will be February the 2nd at 12 o'clock. And we could adjourn the meeting and we could go out of this, but we do need a motion and a second to go out of and adjourn our meeting.
Frank Lucasa, I make a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Claudia Beck, I will second that. And we'll see Michael later.
Claudette, you want to take a vote on that, please?
Oh, sorry. Yes. Claudia Beck, I say aye. Michael Adams? I'm sorry. No, I keep thinking I'm the president of their other one. Sorry about that. Claudia Beck, I say aye. Frank Lucasa?
Aye.
And David Rest?
Yeah, close enough, aye.
Sorry, I'm just not so used to saying your name, your last name. So that is unanimous by our board, and we can go out of and adjourn our meeting.